You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Crescent Under the Southern Cross is a short documentary that tells the story of four Muslim men who fought in the Australian Defence Forces in World War II. Dr. Simon Wilmot directed and produced the documentary, and in this two-part interview, he talks in depth about how these men ended up in Australia, the immigration policies they faced at the time, and the role they played in the war, as well as why it is important to tell their stories. In part one, Dr. Wilmot discusses how these men arrived in Australia, how they ended up in the Defence Forces, and the important missions they were involved in.
Well, one of the interesting dimensions of this story is that it is a story about migration as well as a story about war service. And it's a story about the complexity of migrant lives in times of war, because the four men we followed in this production, Crescent Under the Southern Cross, all of them were kind of stranded in Australia by the war. They were here as temporary migrants, and the circumstances of war meant that they were trapped here. One group was from southern Albania, and interestingly, Albanians form a significant grouping of migrants in a place called Shepparton in Victoria, which is a large agricultural town, or just about a city in Australian terms. And this Albanian community is built on the back of these men who were stranded here by the war. And they'd come out to Australia under a cultural migration program known as Kerbet. This is where young men from villages, particularly in southern Albania, would travel outside of Albania to get work and earn money, but also to learn something about the world. And the intention always was that they would return with some wealth and some knowledge about the world and settle down and marry and have a family in Albania. In the 1920s, late 1920s, after America closed, the US closed its borders to a lot of European migration, in kind of response to its own xenophobia, these Albanian men started coming to Australia and were working in rural jobs. And with the outbreak of war, they were then, Albania was allied with or axied with Italy. And so they weren't able to return. Many Albanian men got interned as kind of Italian foreigners, like a lot of countries who interned people from communities that they're at war with. But there was a group of them who didn't get interned and who continued to work in the agricultural industries, and then who saw as a pathway to naturalisation, which was what citizenship was at the time, joined the armed forces. The other group of men were that we followed, and again, this was a big portion of source of Muslim soldiers in the Australian Defence Forces in the Second World War, were indented pearl divers and labourers working in the pearling industry in Broome, Darwin and Thursday Island. The two men we followed were from Broome, and the pearling industry was stopped with the bombing of Pearl Harbour. And the Australian government pretty much recognised straight away that there were a number of sites across northern Australia that were at risk of being fairly immediately attacked by the Japanese, because they were military bases or they were airports. They were the places in which armed forces could be launched into the new theatre of war in the Pacific. And so pretty much within a month of Pearl Harbour being bombed, the pearling industry was shut down, and the pearlers typically came from the islands of East Indonesia, what's now Indonesia. It was then the Dutch East Indies, came from Malaya, they couldn't return back because those areas suddenly became under attack. They were out of Broome. A lot of the men were shipped to Perth, and a lot of them came down to Melbourne. Particularly to Melbourne came a group of Indonesian pearl divers. And they end up becoming part of the story of the Indonesian independence movement in Australia. The pearl divers we followed, one of them came to Melbourne, the other went to Perth, And from there, both of these men end up in special forces and went, and in the end, they went behind enemy lines in Indonesia, in Borneo, to prepare for the invasion or the reinvasion of Borneo by colonial forces. So these four men we followed, like so many of the Muslims who ended up in the Australian Defence Forces, were migrants who hadn't intended to stay, who ultimately saw war service as a pathway to naturalisation and a better life.
And these Indonesian men and Malay men that went behind enemy lines, what exactly were they doing in Borneo? What were they doing behind enemy lines?
The story—it's a kind of such a rich, complex story. What the ambitions were for the ambitions to free Asia from Japan by European powers is a complicated story because, of course, it's tied up with their own colonial ambitions. It wasn't just that they were trying to free Indonesia and Borneo and Malaya from the Japanese. The British wanted Malaya back as part of its colony, and the Dutch wanted Indonesia back. And so very early on in the development of strategies and plans about responding to the Japanese were very clearly the intention of regaining colonial possessions. And the planning to retaking Borneo started early in 1943. It took 2 years to develop the strategy and to develop get the resources ready to invade Borneo. But they knew nothing about Borneo, as Christine Helliwell talks about in the film. Now, Christine has written an extraordinary book called Semak Tool, The Unstalled Story of the Invasion of Borneo in World War II. And she's won, for that book, which was published a year and a half ago now, she's won the Australian Prime Minister's Award for Writing for History. And she also won an award called the Les Carline Award from the Australian War Memorial for writing about war. But she's an anthropologist. And what's unusual is she's brought to a story about war an anthropological eye. And one of the things she reflects on is the inadequacy of colonial powers' understandings of people and regions for the business of occupying them in a time of war. You know, it's all right to kind of run a colonizing strategy, but when you need to run a war campaign, how do you get local forces on your side, local people on your side of the war? How do you actually operate in territories in which you never really had any access to? These are the high mountain regions of Borneo. And they had initially tried to get some Australian or European Australian, the special forces in Australia were very international. And one of the main leaders of this was a New Zealand man. I should go and grab the book and make sure I remember his name, because he was a New Zealand soldier and he was very, very important in the campaign. When they went into Borneo, they stood out like a sore thumb. They couldn't, you know, kind of hide amongst local populations from the Japanese. And there were some terrible disasters and tragedies when men were sent in there. And so through 1943, 44, they started to recognize they needed local help. And finally they worked out that these Indonesian pearl divers and Malay pearl divers were perfect for the job, not just because they spoke the local languages and looked local, but these men were adventurers. You know, they were highly motivated, incredible people who were prepared to leave their little islands around East Indonesia and travel to Australia under indented labour conditions and do a very dangerous job. So these were smart, clever, highly motivated men, and they were very well prepared for the task of going behind enemy lines to gather intelligence, but also to start raising up and preparing locals to fight against the Japanese. And they were crucial in that task.
That was part one of an interview with Dr. Simon Wilmot, Director of Crescent Under the Southern Cross. Tune in next week for part two, where he talks about how these men were received when they arrived back in Australia after the war, as well as the implications of the White Australia immigration policy that was in force at the time, and why this is an This story is an important part of the Anzac story.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.